Austin, what's the difference between a playwright and a pizza?
I don't know, Reed. What is the difference between a playwright and a pizza?
A pizza can feed a family of four.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 276, How We Write. A few weeks ago, on that 10-hour drive between Stowe, Vermont, and Western Virginia, Reed Martin and I recorded this conversation about how we write our shows, and I was planning on posting it just randomly as a podcast this week. But over the weekend, the subject of how writers create their material became incredibly timely with the news that theater monologuist Mike Daisy had fabricated several moments of his successful one-person stage show, The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs. Apparently what he did was describe some true things that happened, but not to him, as having actually happened to him, which they did not. Well, that's not what we do. Reed and I have created our seven complete abridged scripts for the Reduced Shakespeare Company, from fact, half-truths, innuendo, and our imagination, and any similarity to actual reality is strictly coincidental. We have written now seven of the eight scripts that are part of the Reduced Shakespeare Company oeuvre canon. The latest of which is the Ultimate Christmas Show abridged. How we used to write for about a couple of weeks, wasting time with sitting around a table.
Well, I would get out my tablet and my chisel. It was very time-consuming.
Yeah, we may have talked about this before. When Austin, Adam, and I started to write the History of America together, we all sat in a room and tried to write a scene, which we discovered, in pretty short order, to our credit, wasn't the most efficient way to write. We later found out that most, you know, writing partners don't write that way either. So we would outline, give each other scenes that we were each going to write, go away, and come back with something concrete to discuss, as opposed to sitting in a room and arguing about punctuation and participles.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, so that helped to figure out that we just go away. And I remember a little bit for America, I had this idea that was not based on anything except, I'll tell you what it was based on. I had this idea based on Albert Brooks's rewriting the national anthem we should rewrite a new politically correct national anthem, because this was written in the early 90s when political correctness was a very zeitgeisty topic. But then I went off and wrote that by myself, but we were also kicked around ideas around the table, where we just decided, oh, you know what? I have an idea for Lewis and Clark. I'll go off and write that. And you had an idea for a film noir spoof of Spade Diamond, and you went off and wrote that, Reed.
Yeah, and
it continued for me into Bible. You know, where that's what we kind of broke it up even more, yeah. Codified it.
Yeah, definitely. And so we go away and write sketches individually. Where do you get your ideas from? When somebody, people say a playwright, well, where do you get your ideas?
For me, the ideas usually come from the research. Given whatever the topic is, usually the topic itself will spark a lot of thoughts, feelings, opinions about that, and I'll go, oh, well, here's something I definitely want to quote-unquote say in my author's message about this topic. But then the trick is, you know, hiding that off author's message, not hiding it, but finding a way to make that author's message funny. But usually it's the research. I'll sit down in the research and go, okay, what is it about this topic that, and what funny ideas does it spark? An example from the Bible show is that the story of Abraham, I had written a really lengthy sketch, probably 10 pages, of the story of Abraham, and so I talked to my my one Jewish friend. no, not my one, but my most Talmudic and rabbinical Jewish friend, Deborah Bornstein, who said, "Well, basically, the story of Abraham is where we get the ritual of circumcision." I went, "Circumcision? Say no more." I know exactly what
I'm going to cut the scene.
I'm going to cut to this scene, and that's what it became. You know, bargaining with God, but then this other notion, you know, in terms of my own opinions about the Bible and religion, it came to, you know, God has a sense of humor, and yet so many of his followers seem to not have a sense of humor. So that sort of informed the, I don't know, themes of that scene. So I guess that's where I get my ideas.
Yeah.
How about you?
Once I know what the next show is going to be, or right now we've got two or three shows sort of brewing in our head, the whole world is sort of filtered through that for me. Yeah. So I agree with you. When I start to sit down to do research, I tend to make lists, you know.
Yeah, you're good at making lists. Just listen to this list.
And sometimes it's not anything that ever becomes anything, but it just goes, oh, mistletoe. Well, yeah, there might be something about that. As it turned out in the Christmas show, there is something about mistletoe.
Yeah.
So I make lists, but also just in day-to-day activities. I might be watching something on TV. I might be reading a book. I might just be in line at Starbucks, and I hear a funny line, and I go, oh, yeah. So everything becomes filtered through the topic that I'm thinking about. And so it's sort of the whole life, sort of, once I know the direction we're headed, anything can spark an idea.
Well, and they say that writers write. Yeah, if you're a writer, people say, "Oh, if I had the time, I'd write a novel." Well, that means you're not a writer, because writers write by definition. You know, if you write, you're a writer. Whether you get paid for it is something else again. But I do know that writers write. They also read. They also research. They also think, and they also procrastinate.
I was a playwright from the Bay Area. Trevor Allen came and spoke to a couple of my theater classes that I'm teaching this term about playwriting, and he quoted another playwright, and I can't remember who it is right now. So I'm sorry if you hear this, but he said he's a playwright. He says, "I love deadlines. I love the sound of whoosh as they fly by." Now we don't have that luxury. We can procrastinate, but usually when we start writing, there is a hard deadline of when the first performance is, so we don't have the luxury of just writing until we feel it's done. We have to write towards it, and honestly, for me, it's good to have that, to be under the gun that way.
Well, and I've also heard of other writers who will a couple things, all of which I don't do. They set a goal for themselves of I'm going to write 1,000 words a day or whatever. And if 50,000 words in a novel, then in whatever, 50 days, 500 days, I'll have a novel.
Right.
I don't work like that. I've also heard people suggest that don't go back and read what you've written. Just keep going. Just keep moving forward. Keep moving forward. That's another thing I don't do, because going back to read what I've written helps me strengthen what I have written and also get back into the mindset of the piece that I'm writing. It also helps me hone the thing. I mean, I like to, like when we're presenting scenes to each other or to the actors, I like to have it as fully finished a product as I can make it, so I don't have to explain it. If I have to explain it, it means I haven't written it well. And there was another thing where people, they will leave the day, you know, stand up from their desk chair, having written the first half of a sentence, and they will complete the sentence tomorrow to start the day. Yeah, it's another thing I don't do.
Well, if the second half of the sentence is in your head, you've already finished it.
Yeah.
I do go back and reread the stuff. I think I'm a little more. I don't give myself page deadlines, but I definitely have to schedule myself. Okay, this is, I'm going to go and write, and I don't necessarily have maybe I don't get anything done. Usually, I get something done. Just otherwise, I feel the day has been wasted.
Right.
And sometimes you're writing something you think is brilliant, and it isn't. And sometimes you just, you know, dash something off, and it turns out to be great. But yeah, I'm a little more methodical that way, but not to the degree of you describe people about you know, I got to get 5 pages done and don't go back and reread it. And,
right.
That just seems like what?
Rules for the sake of having rules.
Yeah. I don't see the point of that.
Yeah. I mean, the other point is whatever works for you.
And I think you bring polished scenes. more than I do. And I think when we do readings, I think I just throw a lot of stuff up against the wall. And then when I read it, it's harder for me to, just like in high school, I was supposed to read Hamlet. It didn't make any sense to me. And then I saw Hamlet and I go, oh, it makes sense. And so sometimes I just have a rough idea for a sketch.
Right.
And then we read it and I go, yes, that is something. And I go, no, that isn't anything.
This is Ben Richgruber, the executive director of the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, and you are listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSE? This spring and summer of 2012, you'll be able to RSC us in 34 cities in the U.S. and the U.K., including cities like Waverly, Iowa, Tacoma and Edmonds, Washington, Sonoma and Santa Rosa, California, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. And then we will return to the U.K. in June, performing in York, Buxton, Exeter, Newbury, Nottingham, Truro, Poole, Tunbridge Wells, Peterborough, Canterbury, Derby, Hereford, Rhyl, Barnsley, Salford, Basingstoke, Crawley, where we hope to meet Lord and Lady Grantham, Bedford, Tewkesbury, and London, returning to the Arts Theatre. Now, other cities may be added, so keep checking our tour page. And for a short time only, the Arts Theatre in London is selling a reduced number of tickets per performance for the special London Olympics 2012 price of 2012. That's right, some tickets for every performance at the Arts Theatre in London are being sold for £20.12. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Where do you write?
Yeah, that's a great question because I'm fascinated by that topic as well. Where people write. You know, you have this fantasy. I do. I have this fantasy of, oh, the ideal writing space and the ideal writing surface and the ideal writing thing. I know that when I'm writing, when we're in the midst of something, I will often get up earlier than I'm normally used to getting up simply because it's percolating in my brain and I want to get up and work on it because it's exciting. It's fun. And really in that sense, I can work wherever because I'll take my laptop. I use my laptop. I don't do pen and paper. I'm a better typer than I am a writer. I will take the laptop to the couch. I will take the laptop to a nice comfortable chair outside if the weather's good. I will sit at a desk if I have to, but I haven't had a desk that's been nice. The ideal place, both in LA and now in Chicago, is that there's this room that overlooks a lot of trees, and that I've always found lovely. And when I've worked at my parents' property up in Northern California, you're just looking out on apple trees and horses, and that's been, I have to say, that is the most relaxing and with the fewest distractions, is looking out on trees.
Well, when I'm home, I write. There's two places I write when I'm home. I don't write outside, and I don't write in cafes. I kind of find that distracting for whatever reason. I have my office in the house, which is cluttered with all my personal memorabilia, and I kind of find that stimulating and relaxing at the same time. So I like to write in my office. And also, Joanne Nagel, who helps us with cash flow in our business, has an office in Sonoma that she doesn't use full time. And so anytime she's not in there, sometimes our house is busy with the kids and everything.
Right.
Sometimes I'll go there, and that's a very quiet place to write. But because of the nature of our business, we're away from home a lot, so we have to be flexible. We can't get into that routine where every morning at 10 o'clock we're going to write because we might be driving. I mean, in Austin can only talk on the phone, record a podcast, and drive. He can't be writing a fourth thing would just be too much.
That would be too much. That would be, well, and often, you know, we're in rehearsal halls rewriting.
Yeah. So do you remember specific places away from your home where you wrote specific scenes?
Yes, I remember. I remember in a hotel in St. Albans. I wrote the Elisha song.
Uh huh.
For the Bible show, because we were touring, I guess, the America show, because we were writing the Bible show, or touring Shakespeare, I guess. I wrote in my old office when I lived in Chicago 16 years ago. That's where I wrote the Abraham sketch. I know exactly the desk and in the room where that happened. One scene for the Hollywood show. God, I can't remember which scene it was now. But it was one of the scenes, a couple of the scenes for the Hollywood show were written in the lobby, the foyer, the sitting room of the Welsh Center.
Oh, yeah.
On whatever road, the...
Gray's Inn Road.
Gray's Inn Road, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just most of our book, The Greatest Story Ever Sold, was written at the ranch, out in the woods, you know?
Yeah. I remember writing one-sentence book review, the finale for the book show at our hotel room in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I remember writing the Santa outsourced scene. I write on a computer, but I don't always write on a computer. I remember writing the Santa outsourcing scene while swimming laps.
Ah, great.
In
great.
Sonoma. So the whole thing is in my head, and then I have to get home and write it down.
Another quickly, thing, quickly.
Yeah. And I don't know if I buy the thing. If it's good, you'll remember it. I don't know if that's true or not. I think it usually is, but I'm not sure it's 100% true.
Yeah.
I also remember writing the lyrics to That's Armageddon while running along the banks of the Potomac. I think we were there in 90 at the Kennedy Center in 94, and they said they'd book Bible, and I was saying, oh, well, we could finish with a, oh, yeah, That's Armageddon, sort of a That's Entertainment sideways song. Uh-huh. And so I remember coming up with some of those lyrics as I run along. So, yeah, sometimes you come up with things in your head and write them down later.
Well, and I remember I wrote the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, 'Twas the Travel Nightmare Before Christmas poem in our hotel room in Wellington, New Zealand.
That's good.
And the Happy Merry Christmas Quantica Hanzica was written at the Kennedy Center.
I remember in the rehearsal room on the piano up there by the Terrace Theater.
Yeah, I had that. I do a lot of thoughts while shaving. Mm-hmm. Thoughts while shaving, showering. What's the other thing that starts with an SH?
Something.
Yeah.
Shining.
Shopping. Yeah. Washing dishes. But that was a thoughts while shaving. Just that rhythm came to me. And as Mick Morf has pointed out, and he's absolutely right, although it wasn't conscious on my part, it's the exact same rhythm, but not melody, of the alphabet song from the Sesame Street. Abgadepki
Jekyllmanop Christuvixes. Yeah, different tune, but same rhythm. Yeah.
Same rhythm.
Now, what do you do when you get writer's block?
What do I do when I get writer's block? It's so weird. When I get, usually, this is why I try to be working on several projects at the same time. Because if I get stuck on one, I go to work on the other. And usually going to work on the other gives me something else to think about, and then suddenly it'll just occur to me how to fix the next thing. Or when I go back to the previous thing that I was blocked about, I see it in a completely clear light, and I go, oh, well, obviously this is the fix.
Yeah. I go to work on, I don't continue to try to bang my head against the thing I'm blocked about. Often for me, that will mean that the sketch seems in theory to be a good idea, but when I try to write it, it won't come out.
Right.
So often I find that that's not writer's block, that's just a bad idea.
Bad idea.
Well, it seemed like a good idea that's a bad idea. So the advantage of writing sketch is that I can go to work on a different sketch that I have. So I go back to my list and I say, okay, here's 100 things, maybe 15 of which will end up in the show. But, okay, well, what else do I have a good idea for? Let me start to work on that and put this aside for a while. And I may come back to it. Or I remember a sketch that just struggled and struggled and struggled with, the Monday Night Football sketch in the sports show. And it just seemed like a good idea. But we kept writing it. It was Monday Night Football with Keith Jackson as the sportscaster and Karl Marx and Michael Moore. And I tried it 3 or 4 different ways and about to throw it out. And you just said, well, you know, you need to flip the perspectives. The joke is that not that Karl Marx and Michael Moore don't like football because it's perpetuates the illusion of male superiority and exploits the weak and the vulnerable. In fact, they just like football.
Yeah.
And so just that little switch, I mean, I had felt kind of blocked. Oh, this isn't, no, I guess it's a good in theory, but it was just, you just said, no, you just need to switch the perspective, and then it worked.
Well, it's true, and that's often the most helpful, is that, you know, you bring it into, you read my stuff, I read your stuff, and we go, oh, right, duh, it's this. Or the actress will say something, you can take it off in a different direction, you go, oh, wait a second, you're right. Good thinking, hold that thought, let me go rewrite this, I'll be back in a day or two. I remember we worked with a composer once who had separate rooms for his composing musical work and then another room for his business work and at the, you know, billing or whatever, correspondence. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, God, that just seems so grown up and anal and horrible. And yet now, as I've gotten a little more grown up and anal and horrible myself, it's not a terrible notion, you know, so you assuming that the creativity is the right side of the brain or the left side of the brain and the business is the right side of the brain or whatever, you know, maybe, you know, different rooms correspond to different things. If nothing else, it helps organize stuff so you don't get your creative paperwork confused with your business paperwork. And I can see the wisdom of that, although I don't do it myself. I can see myself maybe going there at a certain point.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Just to clarify, in all of our shows, we do try to get our facts right when we're not getting them wrong on purpose. Send us your writing strategies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, blogger Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Allison and Fran Axelrod. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Ben Richgruber from the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 276 828ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Hey, Austin.
Yes, Reed?
What's the difference between a playwright and a park bench?
I don't know, Reed. What is the difference between a playwright and a park bench?
A park bench can support a family of four.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.